Hello, and welcome back to Here Come the Sun, your weekly Connecticut Sun podcast. I'm your host, Sean Gauthier, and today's episode is a bit of an Olympic break special edition podcast. Earlier this week, I was able to sit down with the voice of the Connecticut Sun on NBC Sports Boston, Brendan Glasheen. Brendan and I talked about his experience being at the All-Star Game, how he got his start in broadcasting, and what to expect for the Sun in the second half of the season. As a production note, my microphone was a little too quiet when we first started recording, and I definitely overcorrected a bit turning it up. I made sure to fix it in post so it's not too loud, but the audio quality on my end won't be that good. But the more important stuff from Brendan all sounds really great, and I can't wait for you to listen to it. So, without further ado, here's my interview with Brendan Glasheen. All right, on today's episode, we've got a very special guest. I'm excited to welcome to the show the voice of the Connecticut Sun on NBC Sports Boston, Brendan Glasheen. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Sean, thanks for having me. Looking forward to this. It's a great time for the W, and we got ourselves a little break. So this worked out good as far as the timing.
Exactly. So I saw on your social media accounts you were saying that this was your first All-Star game with the W. Just give us a little like behind the scenes. What's it like being at the All-Star game? I've never been to one. I know a lot of listeners haven't.
Never been to an All-Star game, period, as far as NBA or W. And I thought about it back before the season started, regardless of whether or not I could get credentialed or not, which I ended up not. But I said, I want to get to one of these All-Star. Now, of course, I picked the most popular All-Star game in league's history. That one didn't quite sink in at the time in April when I booked a flight. But I had some friends that are out there from the previous Sun staff. They now work for the Phoenix Mercury, so they were kind enough. It made it all work, but it was really cool. It felt big. Like it felt like a true. It felt like the league had arrived. And I know they've had moments in the first half of this season that it felt that. But then when you go and you see all the stars on the same floor and the media coverage, you've got a full ESPN W countdown desk kind of overlooking like you would see in an NBA playoff game, like when you see the inside guys or ESPN being there for an NBA finals, something like that. Or even if like TNT was there to cover an NBA All-Star game, it felt big. Phoenix did a really good job. Other than the fact that it was hot as hell, it was good. It was hot. I mean, geez. I mean, we're both in New England and it's like, I came back here and it was 80, but it felt like it was 60. The humidity, but other than that, they did a really good job with it. It was a lot of fun. It was good.
Yeah, it looked really good, and I saw a bunch of other reporters too talking about how it like felt big and felt even bigger than ones that they had been to. So that was really great. And the game itself was a lot of fun. I feel like there's a lot of fans online who were seeing their first Team USA versus WNBA game and were not expecting the level of competitiveness. Obviously Arika Gumbawale was great, but what else, you know, stood out to you during the game itself?
Yeah, the dynamic was fascinating because that was the first real run against another team for Team USA. They're trying to tune up and get ready for legitimate games. They just had a game the other day against Germany in one of their friendlies or whatever you call those games. I guess you'd call them, an exhibition leading into Paris. And so they took the game. They had to kind of take the game seriously because they were trying to learn each other. I mean, there are a number of, almost half the roster is first-time Olympians. I know Brianna Stewart's been there before, Asia Wilson, Taurasi, of course. So they kind of had to, they're running sets. They're trying to figure out who's supposed to be where, whereas the All-Stars are like, well, and Arike is a good one. Like, I feel, and she's taken the high road on all of this, which is great. But it's like, well, we got nothing to lose. We want to go out there and beat them. And they did that a couple years ago when Arike won All-Star Game MVP, which is fascinating that she did that again the other day. So it was cool. And just to have the dynamic of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese being teammates. And then you have this mix of veterans like Tawana Bonner and Brianna Jones of the Sun. Then they reunite with Jonquel Jones, who was their teammate a couple of years ago. When you're in a 12-team league and you play overseas to compensate, to help create a full-time role as a women's basketball player, you have bound to play with these other women at some point along the way. So I think the familiarity was pretty evident. Like, when you're in a 12-team league, you're going to play with each other, against each other, AAU, college, into the W, overseas. So just that competitive nature was really cool, and they took it seriously. There was defense from the get-go in that game. And I really think that breeds from the fact that this game mattered for USA as far as just getting an understanding of who's got what role. When we have this five on the floor, how do we want to play? like something I noticed, and I watched this in the Germany game the other day, was watching Alyssa Thomas, Brianna Stewart, and Asia Wilson on the floor at the same time. Those are the three MVP finalists last year on the court at the same time. And I know Alyssa can do a bunch of different things. So can Stewart. So can Wilson. Caitlin Clark was fascinating her assists, but as far as her ability to kind of command the floor and put people in the right places. And that's kind of what I felt going into the season, where she would thrive best with Aaliyah Boston and Alyssa Smith, but having all-stars out there with her, Aaliyah and Kelsey Mitchell as her teammates, Caitlin can play with anybody. I think that's what struck me. And then Arike just went into takeover mode. I think she only had taken two shots in the first half, and it's like anything. I mean, you're in a game, whether it's pickup in the backyard with friends or you're down the street at the park, like, you give the ball to the hot hand, and then Arike was on fire. So Caitlin was good. Arike was good. Angel Reese had a double-double. Some of those offensive rebounds, I'm like, damn, like it carried right over from the regular season into the All-Star game. So
yeah, she battles. She really battles on the boards. Really, like, does. You can just see the physicality, especially when I feel like a lot of people porching out her against Alyssa Thomas in the paint.
Yeah.
And just her being able to keep up with Alyssa Thomas is a huge credit to Angel Reese, because like, Alyssa Thomas is no joke in the paint.
And the All-Stars kind of had some wind at their sails too. Like, Alicia Gray won the 3-point and the skills challenge. So she's coming into the Saturday night feeling good about herself, and she's got some attention. I think some folks in Phoenix that are just fans of the Mercury, but also just fans of the league or new fans to the league, are like, oh, I like that lefty, Alicia Gray. She can play. And so she had generated the nice buzz when her name got introduced and she checked into the game. So it was really cool. It felt big. Like I had said, the introductions, you had Pitbull at halftime. That was neat. So it was good. It was good. I mean, look, it got out of hand at the end. Like, Arike was on fire. And then at that point, you're like, okay, this is over. But really till about the 4 or 5 minute mark of the fourth quarter, you're like, okay, like, this is it. And USA, I mean, the other striking visual was how upset they were after the game. Like, they were like, and that's the iron. It kind of summarizes what we saw in the first half of the year, like the competitiveness of these women. Some people call it pettiness or jealousy, and I know they can go in a million different directions, but there's so much pride, and I think they're truly appreciative of where the game is this year and how it's kind of been growing now the last couple of seasons. And of course, this year it's been a tidal wave. It's been taken over. So I think while it looks like there can be moments where they're like, why not me? Or why am I not? It's like, I think they're trying to soak it all in and take advantage of every moment they get. So that was a big stage for the league. And the numbers reflect that. The number, I think it peaked at over 4 million viewers. And then it was about 3.5 was the rating for the game, 3.5 million. So it was good stuff, really good stuff.
Yeah, it was great. I mostly skip All-Star games in other sports, and I was like,
well, they've all kind of lost their meaning, right? I mean, I know like baseball, it used to mean home field advantage in the World Series, and even the NBA, it all matters to them to be there, to get to wherever the city is, whether it was Indianapolis or in previous years, and it's like, it's... You can't sink your teeth into anything. Like, you might get a handful of one-on-one moments. Now, I heard Asia Wilson and Brianna Stewart after the game say it's not that format. Say it was not USA against the All-Stars, and it was just All-Star, right? Would they take it as seriously? They said, like, well, we would like to just kind of chill. We just had a really ramped-up first half. I mean, that's really what this year is. It's two mini-seasons, what they're going through right now with the back-to-backs and trying to squeeze in 40 games into 2 month and a half chunks, and then you get a month off in between. So it's a 4 month year, not including the playoffs. So I hope like the NBA was taking notes in this. I thought it was that good. So there was some meaning behind it. And maybe I think that might be coming, because when LeBron and Steph and Kevin Durant, they're on their way out in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years I think maybe LeBron keeps playing, 'cause he's been really good at these Olympics and these Olympic exhibition games. I think the next wave of guys where they're trying to prove their worth and prove they belong, there's that sense. It was really cool. It was really cool. And like, I thought like the other players that shine in those, like Sabrina Ionescu, I thought had an MVP caliber first half. She's electric to watch. So you almost forget about like Ionescu because of the attention Clark's had. So as far as just the stage and then the actual game being competitive. While the score really didn't reflect that, there were moments where there's real defense. They're calling out screens. They're rotating. And like, even in their huddles, like just being in the building, this is stuff you might not see on TV, but oh, they're invested. And Cheryl Miller, I thought, was fascinating as a coach, motivating them. So it was a lot of good checks across the board for this.
Did I also see that you called another game while you were in Phoenix? It was maybe like it was the Basketball Without Borders.
Yeah. So it just worked out that way. Before I had traveled to Phoenix, I do some stuff with the NBA on their digital side, just some mostly remote projects. And this was going to be a remote show. So I'd already booked my travel to Phoenix in April. And one of the guys I work with over at the NBA is a producer. He reaches out and he says, hey, like we're doing these NBA Academy games the second week of July. And then, oh, by the way, we have this event on July 21st. It's the Basketball Without Borders Women's Camp. And the NBA does this as well. This is just the second all-female one that they just had this past weekend. And they do this. The NBA just did theirs in Indianapolis at the All-Star Game. So it's players from all over the globe. Go right down the list of countries in Europe. And Africa has players that come through. So anyway, these are the next wave of highly touted overseas prospects that are on their way to get a college scholarship, or they're getting those college coaches there, scouts, WNBA scouts are in the building. So what I had found out, I just put two and two together and I said, hey, where is that event on the 21st? And they said, oh, it's in Phoenix at the Phoenix Suns practice facility. Not the new one, the Mercury just opened. I had to get that figured out before I arranged my travel. Suns practice facility is actually 20 minutes away from downtown. So anyway, I was like, I'm going to be there. Is there a way we can do it? And they've got it's a really like limited setup. They're just trying to get the games on the air and people can see them, especially mostly of course for the athletes. And if it's family or even just scouts or folks that help orchestrate and run the BWB. So it just worked out where I'm like, perfect. I can work Sunday. I can have some fun Friday and Saturday. So most people are out of Phoenix by Sunday morning or Saturday night after the game. I was like, it's the opposite for me. I got to work Sunday for a couple hours. So, it worked out that way. So yeah, I had some fun and then I did a little work. So I felt when I left Phoenix, eventually after the flight chaos with Delta, once I eventually got out of there, I'm like, all right, you know, I wasn't completely useless this weekend. I had some fun and I did a little work at the same time.
That's awesome. That's so good. And I feel like too, just kind of like pivoting a bit, You call so many games and so many different kinds of games. I follow you on social media and I feel like it's like every other day I go on and it's like, oh, I'm calling this, you know, this, like you just said, like the NBA Academy games. And
yeah,
you also do the play by play for the main Celtics in the G League. I saw in you do Athletes Unlimited, National Lacrosse League. Like, how did you get started in broadcasting and how do you possibly call all these different types of sports as well as, you know, all these different leagues?
Got started with it. I kind of had a feeling I would want to do it when I was probably 11 or 12. I mean, I was a baseball player and I played in Little League and I wasn't very good. I had a good little run at the end of Little League when I started to figure it out. And when you're in like 11, 12 years old, you start to really get it. Like as far as a viewer, when you watch professionals or you watch college, mostly for me and being in Boston, it's mostly the pro teams that you kind of have your eye on. And of course, growing up in a golden age of how good the teams were, it's easy to kind of gravitate towards it, right? Because it's just like, all right, great. We're in a championship game or a championship series almost every year. Pick a sport and they're there. football, basketball, baseball, and the hockey team too, even winning the title going back to 2011. So anyway, I was that kid in right field when I was 9 who would just like talk into his glove and like I would study our lineup and I'm breaking down like our batting order. Like I was a nerd in that regard. Anyway, went to high school, played baseball. I didn't have a future in playing beyond high school. So I guess you'd call it an internship. I guess more so at the time it was a volunteering act, but I volunteered I'm from Lowell, Mass originally. So I volunteered at 980 WCAP, which was the local AM radio station. And I did like, basically when people ask, or at the time I would compare it to like Sunday NFL Countdown. And when you watch that and it's 3 hours leading into the 1 o'clock football games on Sunday, you have like 10 correspondents at all these games. So I would go out to a game every Friday night and I would just call in on my cell phone and give a report, like who threw a touchdown, what's the score, what's the atmosphere like, et cetera. So, and then I went to school for, I went to Syracuse for school. It's a good program, really good alumni base, excellent student radio opportunities there. Sunk my teeth into it. Very competitive in terms of like just, there's a lot of people that want to do what you want to do. So you're humbled mm-hmm. really quickly. Like, whoa, like if you want to be in this, you've got to like, there's someone else trying to outlast you, if you will. So it's almost like competitive sports in a way. But you get, you know, I worked in the student radio station, worked my way up there, did some games, did some minor league baseball out of college. And then I just kind of, I've maneuvered this maze of getting, you know, one opportunity turns into another, and a lot of it's opportunity and a lot of it's timing, relationships. And I know that's a lot of cliche stuff I'm sure people have heard, but when one thing turns into the other, suddenly you're in a league or you're doing games for a team and it's like, wow. Like I sometimes think back, I go, wow, I know so many people now just by doing so much. And to answer your question about doing leagues and games, like that's the name of the game. I mean, versatility matters so much. The more familiar you are with different sports, I think the more valuable you are in terms of just being available and putting together. And for me, I'm a freelance broadcaster, so to be able to put together a schedule and pick, you know, fill that date here, fill that weekend here. Okay, I can give myself a weekend there, and then I know I'm going to come out of that weekend doing this, this, and that. So I could go down a whole rabbit hole about all these different leagues and teams I've done games for, but you have to love it. There's passion involved with it too. But you have to put the time in as far as getting, it's another cliche, but it's reps. You got to get reps. And then when you do a good job that's the job. You got to do a good job. And then the other part of it is just being, you know, a good teammate, good person. And if you link on with the right folks, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like there are moments where you're like, all right, am I doing a good job? You know, and usually in this kind of, it's like umpires in baseball. You know, usually no feedback is good feedback, and you're doing well. But if you screw up, oh, you'll hear about it, right? From whether it's a fan on social media or someone. The worst one is if you hear from someone from the team, which I've luckily that's never happened to me yet, because it happens. I feel like it happens to everybody because it just kind of goes that way sometimes. So yeah, I mean, it's been my fourth year doing the Sun. I've done the G League now for a couple years, so it's been good. It's been good.
Yeah, that's great. I always enjoy watching on NBC Sports Boston. I've vocally complained about whenever games aren't on there on social media. So I do appreciate you guys' coverage a bunch. I think one thing I wanted to ask too about that is you post the cards that you have for the broadcast booth on social media. Where do the cards, do you make those cards? Where do the cards come from?
So I've used different kind of templates over the years. A good friend of mine, his name's Mike Monaco. You might have heard his name. He's filled in on the Red Sox on NESN. He's doing some stuff at ESPN. This was probably, I'm talking about the current card I used probably 4 or 5 years ago. I reached out to Mike and go, hey, like I'm trying to mix it up and try something different with my boards. And so I've used his board for basketball, and I just kind of, and mm-hmm. I use different ones for different sports. Like I used a hockey board to now do lacrosse, the indoor lacrosse, because it just mapped out well with the number of players and whatnot. So that's my cheat sheet, if you will. If you're cramming for a final, and the professor or the teacher says, "Hey, it's open note," you know, which is like, you know, you're like, "Oh, this is nothing."
That's the dream. So it's like, that's the dream every time.
Your open notes. Your cheat sheet, it better be good, because if it's not ready, if you're not well prepared, then when you go into a game and you don't know what's going to happen in the game, that's the beauty of it. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to use from that thing going into a game. Now, there's some stuff like storylines, like if we're playing New York and like we play the Liberty, I think right before the break, and it's like, all right, you know, two teams that met in the semis, they've already played each other twice. Like, there's things that are guaranteed, like, okay, that's going to come up in a game. But as far as like a historic record, you know, Alyssa Thomas getting a triple double. I've got some notes on her previous triple doubles, things like that. And then the basics, you know, I've got their number, their name, their years in the league, where they went to college, how many were they traded in the offseason, how many years have they been with the Sun? Just all that kind of bio information that might come up. And you try to weave that stuff in, especially this year when you've got new fans in the league and the beauty of doing games for one team is you can recycle a lot of that content because it might not come up in a game. And then I try to maybe add, I'll scribble notes from a press con. We'll do like the pregame Zooms with Stephanie White, the head coach, or even players that will come available after games. And you try to work in some new stuff, right? Because you want to keep it fresh. You don't want to just regurgitate a bunch of stuff, but some background on the players. And at the end of the day, though, the game's the game. And luckily with the Sun, a number of games we have done, they have been close games going into the fourth quarter. So at that point, like, you're barely looking at that thing. I just think it's a cool way to kind of engage, and I'm trying to be good about engaging fans, and like, it's my fourth year, so I haven't been around that long, and the league really hasn't been around that long. I know folks think like 27 years has been around. It's like, that's not a long time. I mean, the NBA, I try to remind new fans, it's like the NBA finals were on tape delay in the 80s. Like, yeah. It took a while for that sport, for basketball to be as big as it is. I mean, I think in America now, football and basketball are the two biggest sports. And we just saw that with the NBA and the WNBA TV rights deal, like what the sport means. It's become a year-round sport with the W, with college, and of course the NBA. But I say all that because when you're doing your prep, you try to remind yourself, like, hey, you never know who might be tuning in for the first time to a WNBA game. So recycling stuff that you might think, as someone who covers it, you're like, all right, everyone knows who Alyssa Thomas is. Well, that might not be the case, right? That might not be the case. Like, they might not know she went to Maryland, and she may have crossed over for a year with Breonna Jones. Just, like, little things like that that you try to remember and you trigger. So I think I like to post the boards just to kind of give an inside to what we're doing. And that's the work to me. Like, that's the prep. That's the grind of the gig in terms of the in-between. If we have a game on a Sunday and then we play Tuesday, like, that's what I'm doing between. The games are the easy part because then you're like, all right, now I got to see what happens. Like, you can't script the game. The game's going to happen, and then you figure out what the conversation is. And the other big part that a board does not help you with is interacting with your analyst. So I've worked with Ashley Battle, Megan McEwen, Tarika Foster Brasby's our sideline reporter, just going through some of the names. And I've worked with a lot of partners with the Sun over the years, like trying to get an understanding of what they do well, how to make them shine. And it's supposed to be a conversation. We're supposed to have some fun with it. So the boards are there as a guide. It is truly a study guide, a cheat sheet. And when you need something, you can be able to point to it and find it and go to it. And if it's not there, it's not there. And if a play, say I'm like looking at the thing and I've got my pen on it, and then something else comes up in the game, this takes some discipline to be like, it's not there. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it doesn't fit. And that I'm guilty of that. Early in my career was like, look at this. I did all this stuff. I've got all these notes. Like, I gotta make sure people know what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, like, that's great, but no one really cares. Like, they care about the game. They really do. They care about the game. And then if you're ready and it works and it fits, then it's like, okay, like this guy does his homework, which is good. So.
That's awesome.
Long-winded way of explaining that, but I just think there's the boards are the boards, and I take pride in doing the boards, but like, I try to remind myself, like, yeah, this is, and the Sun one doesn't change much. I'm updating it mostly, but when a new team comes in, or not a new team, but a different team on the schedule comes in, and that's been the beauty of it. I said this to you earlier on the show, like, when you're in a 12-team league, and it's the 140 best players, there's not a lot of turnover. Now, this year has been different with this rookie class. Like, rarely in the league do you see the top 10 picks all make a team and they're all playing. That hasn't happened historically in the league. I mean, the Sun are a good example of this. Like, Dejounte Carrington was a second round pick in 21. They didn't have a first round pick that year, or maybe they traded it. I can't remember. But like, I mean, typically, like, that draft in 21, that first round, I don't think there's anyone in the first round that's in the league anymore. Or if they are, they're like hardship contract or they're end of the bench. So, that's kind of where I've been. It's a fun league to cover because it's actually really simple, I think, in terms of you don't have to learn. It's not football where you got to learn 53 on one side and 53 in another.
Yeah.
Right? It's like there's 10 to 12 players per team, including maybe an injury or the cap, where some teams can only carry 11. Some teams can carry 12 because of just their max slots that they have allotted or whatnot. And then the other team, I'm like, all right, like, for example, New York, their whole team came back from last year. They made some tweaks to their bench, but I've got basically a dictionary or a encyclopedia of like Breanna Stewart notes from the last 3 or 4 years. And that's changing because of just the amount of accolades these stars have earned. So,
yeah. Wow, that's, yeah, that's a ton of fun. I want you to know, I do read the boards when you post them online.
Yeah, I think that now, too. I'm like, I post these. I'm like, I better scroll in, make sure I'm not giving away anything here, you know? it's all information anyone really could find. It's nothing that, it's not nothing top secret.
Yeah, it's great for me. I before starting the show, I made sure to like print out and read the full Sun media guide. So I'd read through all of that, but then, you know, as I was getting ready to break down games against opponents, I was like, you know, I started the show because I'm a Sun fan, right? And so I know a decent amount about the Sun from watching a bunch of games and reading reporting, but I was like, I don't know anything about these other teams outside of the games I've watched against them. So honestly, the boards are really helpful. I'm like, oh, I didn't know this about this player. Yeah. Let me learn a little bit about somebody else. So that's been helpful. So thanks for posting them.
Good to hear that. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I think it's that's the whole idea, right? You go into a game and you want to have an understanding of and look, when we do the Sun games on NBC Sports, especially on the road, so I've found this and I've tried to explain this to people, and not everyone might agree with this. This is kind of how I look at it. Like when the Sun are home and they're playing whoever, Atlanta, New York, or go right down the list of the teams. When we're at home, and say, for example, our game is also on NBA TV, or if we're on Amazon Prime, or if we're on CBS Sports Network, I know going into that game, like, we're going to get and especially if it's a standalone game. So say we're at 7, and then Sparks play the Lynx at 10. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, like, I keep reiterating this, because I think it's important to say it. Like, 12-team league, some fans are just fans of the league. Like, we're not at the point yet where it's an NBA where there's 30 teams, there's a team in your market, and you're going to their games and you want their broadcast. Like, the league is still growing, where I feel like it's important, especially when we are on a national feed, that we're going to get other W fans. Like, we need to educate and try to map the show where we're getting a WNBA fan, whether it's a new fan or an established fan, especially the established fans, because they care. They care a lot more in terms of they're just invested in the whole thing over the mm-hmm. however many years they've been tuning in. I think it's important to make sure we're doing our due diligence on the opponent. Now, when we're on the road and it's only on NBC Sports Boston, that's where I think we get a little more leeway to be a little bit more Sun-centric, and mm-hmm. we can get into a little bit more storytelling about the players. You don't have to spend as much attention on the opponent. And I'm also like, if the other team's doing well, give the other team their kudos. I'm not going to dump on the Sun if they have a bad night. I just don't think, I mean, it's kind of part of the role, I guess, but I've been very lucky, Sean. My fourth year, this team doesn't lose much. They win 80% of their home games, and they're a top 4 seed at the minimum every year. So I haven't had to worry about a bad year or a bridge year, or what they're going to do with, like, I'm not thinking about the draft in August. Like, that hasn't, this is a win now franchise.
Yeah.
So I try to keep that in mind, especially, and you know, when we have a big star coming in, like so when the Sun are at home and you got Brianna Stewart who went to UConn, or Diana Taurasi who went to the UConn flavor is important to the Connecticut folks. Or when Caitlin Clark, you know, came to town, you know, you're trying to remind yourself, like, hey, this league is still growing, and you got to do right by the league to grow mm-hmm. it and call the game that way. And again, maybe I wouldn't think that way if the Sun weren't as good, because it's like, so like when they win, it's like, okay, they're supposed to win. They're supposed to win like 65 to 70% of their games, and they should be, you know what I mean? So maybe if they weren't as good, maybe I'm thinking like, if I'm calling a Sun home game and they win, it's only like their 8th win of the year. I'm like, I'm more elated about that. So I'm excited when they win. Don't get me wrong. It's more so just trying to do right by the league, I think, is really important. I think that I try to take extra pride in that, to call the game for the fan. And like, you don't want to insult the fan, like especially like Sun fans. If they're not playing well, like, you can call that. There's a line. You don't want to go over the top. But and if the other team plays well, like I know I've referenced New York a couple times. We had New York on that Camp Day game a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago, and Stewart and Ionescu blocked like 4 shots in the last 2 minutes. If I don't give energy to that, and I sulk and I go, well, there's a block by Stewart, like, that's not right. Like, that's a clip that could go on the NBA or the WNBA socials, and the Liberty, or even the opponents are pulling our feed, because that's the only feed they get access to. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that's not authentic.
I think pivoting a little bit just to like the Sun season so far. Yeah. The Sun are 18-6, second place. Like you said, this is a team that wins. They still don't have any wins over Vegas or New York this season.
Or Seattle, yep.
Or Seattle. How are you feeling about the season? Obviously, again, like we just said, like, this is a team that's in win-now mode. They're winning. Do you feel like they are... I know that they're saying that, you know, it's title or bust for them. How are you feeling on that and, like, how the season's been going so far?
Well, they started red hot, as we know. They were 13-1. I think the streak got to 12 to open the year. They were 12-0. And then 13-1 was the best 14-game start to a season. I think they would agree with this, like, their margin for error against the really good teams is thin. Because I think those other teams are just so talented. And the truth is, and I think, you know, Dawana Bonner's in year 15 at 36. She'll be 37 in August. She's her last 2 years as a scorer, and she was an all-star again this year. She's kind of had this renaissance period of, like, okay, like, you're reminded. There was a period there, I think, at the end in Phoenix where she wasn't making all-star games. And when you're playing with Taurasi and Griner, hard to get touches, and you're not going to be the number one option. And she's been their number one option as far as a scorer since she's been in Connecticut. And this franchise, the last 5 years, they've had an injury, a key injury, or, you know, Jonquel Jones didn't play in the bubble in 2020, and then Alyssa Thomas has the Achilles in 21. They lost Jasmine Thomas at the point in 22, so they've pivoted, and then Breonna Jones last year. So you've had four, mm-hmm. not just, like, out for a couple weeks, season-ending, pivotal injuries to change not just, you know, the talent that you lose on the floor, but how you play. So for this particular team, this Sun team in 2024, knock on wood, they've been healthy. They haven't had to miss games. Their starting lineup, with the exception of one, I think Ty Harris had to miss a game due to an illness. Same starting five every game. That's hard to do in that league. And especially, again, when you're playing. Now, some of the Sun players, like Carrington and Harris, didn't play overseas. They were in Connecticut for a bulk of the winter, rehabbing as well as getting in the weight room, and that's been noticeable. Dawana Bonner, mm-hmm. for the first time in a decade plus, didn't play overseas this past year. The idea was, I'm going to take the year off, take the winter off, and gear up for another title run. And Alyssa Thomas, of course, has been pretty busy. And Breonna Jones was rehabbing. And then Alyssa Thomas has been busy, of course, because of the Olympics coming up in a few weeks or next week. So how do I feel? I think their defense is going to keep them in every game. That's been their bread and butter, whether it was Kurt Miller or Stephanie White as head coach. They can hang their hat on defense. And against the worst teams or the teams that are not in that top five, you can get, when you add it up, you can probably get 35 to 40 points a night off turnovers and off second chance points, like hustle plays. Now, when you play the really good teams that are just more buttoned up because of their continuity, and I know New York's only had that core together for 2 years, but having that 1 year under their belt has proven to be huge as far as their connectivity. Vegas has had that core of players together now for a number of years. Now, I think Seattle, we've yet to see peak Seattle, but their lineups with NECA and Jewel Lloyd and Skylar Diggins-Smith, that's a formidable threesome that's going to be in there at the end. And Minnesota, even them, like they made tweaks. I did not expect this from Minnesota, and I should be putting a bath soap in my mouth, because it's like Cheryl Reed's a great coach, and Afisa Collier is outstanding. If it weren't for Asia Wilson, I think Collier is probably your MVP favorite, maybe Ionescu. So they're going to be right in it. And the Marina Mabry pickup is a huge pickup. Like, that is, like, I couldn't believe that. And not because I thought that they, that's like a move you do in the offseason. That's like an MLB trade deadline kind of move that you don't see in the WNBA. That kind of move doesn't happen. So they said, F them picks. We're going to go in. We're going all in. So you have a window, right? You have a window with Bonner and Thomas. And I know Thomas is only 33. And Bonner's age, she's 36. But Alyssa Thomas is in year 11, 33 years old. But think of the amount of minutes she's played.
Like, true.
Those are hefty minutes. So, like, I know folks are like, look at LeBron. He's 40. Taurasi's like on another planet, so she doesn't even really belong in this conversation. 42 years old, still doing what she's doing. So yeah, they're going for it. I think like they get Seattle two more times. They get Vegas, I think, two more times. They only play New York one more time, but with Mabry here, they've almost given themselves a clean slate, which could go one way or the other. Let's see how it works, see what it how it fits. I think Rachel Banham was a locker room favorite. They're going to miss Rachel as far as her her way to kind of galvanize the group. Jefferson had not played yet. I like the pickup there, though, too. But I think Marina Mabry is going to become instantly their best sharpshooter, and they need shooting. Their three-point numbers are down. They get to the free throw line, but they're not making their free throws. Like, that's unacceptable. They would admit that. I mean, I'm not saying anything out of line. Like, they would admit, like, we're a veteran team. Their oldest player has been in the league for four years. That's Veronica Burton, who they picked up after she got cut from Dallas. So this is a win-now team, and I love the Burton pickup's been phenomenal. And Carrington and
Harris. So great.
Carrington and Harris, to me, are the key to the whole thing. Now, Mabry kind of changes my analysis on that, but Carrington and Harris have to be, like, so if we're playing the game, like, you're comparing their chances to the other elite teams in the league. So Vegas, New York come first. Those teams, they're starting fives on any given night. And Vegas, I'm not as high on, because I think Wilson has had to be great every night for them to win. And I figured you're going for a three, like the Kansas City Chiefs this year are going for a three-peat. Any sport, any league where a team is going for a three-peat, I'm not surprised they can't. And Chelsea Gray was hurt, and she connects that whole team. I wasn't surprised that they started a little rocky, but I think people, like, I wasn't panicking. I'm like, they're gonna figure this out. Like, Vegas is gonna figure it out. I think now they got four Olympians, so they're not getting the Olympic break, right? Like,
yeah,
that's something to keep an eye on coming out of the break. Like, how these players that played more so the contenders. How do you look? So I'm really looking at New York and Vegas. How do your teams look when your bread and butter, like Ionescu, Stewart, and then the four in Vegas? Like, how do you look coming out of the break, having played? You're going to play some high leverage minutes in these Olympics. I know they should probably win the gold medal handedly, but they're going to play, especially Wilson and Stewart, and Gray for that matter. So for Connecticut, I think you've got to get consistency from Harris and Carrington. And Carrington's had unbelievable highs, and so has Harris. But can you get a consistent 25 to 30 points a night to alleviate Bonner, alleviate Thomas? And I think Breonna Jones, I have to remind myself sometimes too, because she came back so well from that Achilles injury. She started off really well, and she's an all-star this year, which is amazing, shooting a high clip from the field. I think Breonna Jones, now with a break, can kind of ramp it back up out of the break, and I think they got to get her involved. Breonna Jones, I know they call them the core three. Breonna Jones is 28. Like, she's not, she doesn't have as many miles as Bonner and Thomas, so they clearly, Breonna Jones matters a lot to the puzzle. So I think, but the Mabry pickup, I think is, that's why I don't really know what to say. Like, if they didn't pick up Mabry, I'm like, okay, like, I got a pretty good idea of where this team is, but the Mabry thing, like, that's not just a nice piece. Like, that's a 15 point a game player that can hit.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch out of the break those first five or six games just to see what it looks like.
Yeah. And I feel like so many, especially I feel like, I'm guessing at who the people are on Twitter. Right. But, like, it seems like relatively new Chicago fans are saying, like, you know, you picked up Mabry, where are the points coming from? It's like people, I was seeing some reporting, I read a bunch of pieces from Emily Adams about talking about how Mabry really, like, switched to being a lot more about distribution this season. Yep. It's a lot more about her passing.
Yep.
But, like, on the Sun team, I can't see that being, like, what they're using her primarily for, right? Like you said, she's someone who's just going to go out there and knock down shots.
Mabry started her career in Dallas, and you play with Arike, like, you're not going to, the touches are limited. And not even that, just, like, bringing up the ball. And then in Chicago, she was with Kalia Copper, who is a point, Copper can do a lot of different stuff. And that's why I think Copper's had an unbelievable year in Phoenix. I thought her game, too, can translate no matter where she is. But, yeah, Mabry's role becomes a lot more defined where she doesn't have to be the true point guard. Like Ty Harris, I think, has done a really good job of taking that job on. And of course, when you have Thomas, Alyssa Thomas in the open court, she can also act as a point guard. I mean, Stephanie White's goal is for everybody on the team and everybody that's on the floor at any given moment can be a ball handler and orchestrate offense. Like, that's her goal. She wants to implement a pace offense, or the key difference, pace and being there's pace and then playing fast. I don't think Connecticut plays all that fast, but if you play with pace, you're making half-second to one-second decisions. When the ball is in your hands, you know exactly what you want to do with it, in theory, the minute you get the ball. Mabry is a catch-and-shoot player. I think, and this is the first time in her career she'll be on a contender, like a real contender. Like, you're going to be in the playoffs for sure. It's a matter of now what seed you'll be, and you'll have a more defined role on a championship team. Whereas Mabry kind of coming up was, she was figuring out where she fit in Dallas and in Chicago, but I think you're right. Like with Chicago, you make two picks to two post players in Cardoso and Reese, and you had Dana Evans, and then of course Kennedy Carter had an unbelievable first half. So they're like, Chicago's got pieces. Like, I think they're going to be okay in the long run. I just think Mabry probably felt like, where do I kind of fit in this? And she was their leading scorer in the early part of the year, and she was a big part. And she, and by the way, Mabry has been a killer against the New York Liberty. So I'm putting two and two together. Like, we need someone to commit who knows how to beat New York. And Marina Mabry has been part of a few upset wins over New York, and she's had big games. That's a factor. I'm fascinated to see how Mabry and I think Mabry and Carrington are going to be fine. I think that's just the internet. Like, when you're teammates, like, that stuff goes out the window. You see it in pro sports all the time. When they become teammates, everyone's friends again. Like, that's, again, man, I keep telling you, like, and I'm not saying you don't know this. I'm just trying to remind myself. I remind myself, like, it's 140 best players in the league.
Yeah.
It's not a lot to choose from. It's not like it's hard to get in. And then once you're in, like, Carrington's a great example. Second round pick. She's worked her way up in the rotation last year. Now she's a starter in year five. I think it's year five for Carrington. So, or year four, pardon me, year four. So when you're in year four and you've got an established role, you're a part of winning. And Mabry, I think, is hungry for that opportunity. So she'll have a place and she'll fit. I think the players at All-Star were excited about it. Thomas, Bonner, they're excited about having her. So she will fit a need, and she's a floor spacer and as a catch and shoot threat. Or she doesn't have, and like, I think you hit the nail on the head. Now it's not like, it's not, okay, now I don't have to go to win a game and think, well, I better have at least five assists, just like when it comes all out of the wash. Probably going to have five or six assists. Oh yeah, I better hit 40% of my threes, and I got to score like 15 to 20 a night. Like, now it's like, I don't have to do that every night. I might be asked one night to be a facilitator to alleviate Ty Harris's minutes. Mabry's been a better defender this year. She adds a little more length than Harris, so maybe they can mix those lineups up where Harris doesn't have to play and Mabry can be the point guard in certain sets. And there's other moments where she can just run around off the ball and catch and fire. So I think it creates a whole bunch of opportunities where they can be dynamic and multiple offensively. I sound like a football coach. We want to be multiple. I mean, that's kind of what they want to do, though. They want, any given night, it will be hard to game plan against them. So.
Yeah, and like, they tend, it's like, I feel like every game I watch at some point, you end up saying, you know, the Sun have all five starters in double digits, right? It's like, that's just kind of how this team works. And so I'm really excited for Mabry. I think before I let you go, I did want to say too that, you know, the next Sun home game is the game at the TD Garden. Yeah. I bought tickets to that the second I got the emails announcing it.
Love that.
How excited are you? Are you guys calling that game? How excited are you to be, you know, in that booth?
We are doing it. It's going to be a local show. I don't know if we're on. I'll take and check it real quick. I don't know if we're going to be on another feed as far as like an NBA TV or whatnot. But yeah, you're right. That'll be our first game. First home game out of the break. They're in Atlanta Sunday. So the first game out of the break is the 16th. They're in Dallas. But when they're on Ion and they're on the road, we will not do it. Ion will handle the game. So our first game out of the break will be on Ion at Dallas, the Sun. And then Sunday they're in Atlanta at 3. And then yes, Tuesday the 20th is at TD Garden. So I was just at Fenway Park the other day for the Blink-182 concert, and there is signage everywhere on the MBTA. I know the commercial airs with Ty Harris and I think it's Olivia Nelson-Adota. Or maybe it was Breonna Jones. I can't remember who it was. I know Ty Harris is in it. She's all over the commercial to pump up the game. I'm hearing it's close to like a sellout. Like they're only about 1,500 tickets away in the upper balcony area to blow the thing out. It's a long time coming. There's never been a WNBA game at TD Garden before. It's a basketball city. I think that's why it makes a lot of sense why the last 2 years now we've been on NBC Sports Boston. It's a basketball network. They've done a really good job, I think, promoting the team. They've been supportive as far as the promos and airing some highlights. They're doing it in their updates between show. I watch a lot of the talk radio guys because I work at the station at the Sports Hub part-time, so I'm guilty. I tune into those guys, as negative as they can be. but it's like, I think it's healthy. It's good banter, and it's entertainment. That's just my opinion. Anyway, they're pumping up the Sun, which is good. Personally, I mentioned to you before about I volunteered at a local radio station when I was in high school. And one of the last things I did was the MIAA, so the high school basketball state championships. I think that they actually did the semifinals at TD Garden, and then the final was in Worcester at the DCU Center. Now, I didn't call a game, but I was in the building. I wrote my college essay about that, like how I was at the parquet, and I'm like, this would be cool to do this for a living, just to be at a game. And at the time, I didn't know if I wanted to do play-by-play or not, but I wanted to be at games and cover it. So I've been to the Garden plenty as a fan. I went to, when the Sun made the announcement about the game, this was December of 23, they actually invited me to come out. They did a jersey swap with Jaylen Brown and Breonna Jones, and we had good seats. They promoted it at halftime. That's when they made the formal announcement that the Sun would have a home game there. I'll be honest. I mean, it's such a whirlwind when you're in the thick of the season and you're going game every other day, or sometimes three games or four games in a week. And I just look at my calendar and go, oh my God, we're going to be at TD Garden in like a month. Like, so I'm very excited. It hasn't sunk in yet, but I'm really, really excited about that, 'cause I'm a huge Mike Gorman guy. I grew up watching Mike. And I know he just retired, and Sean Grandy, who's done radio. I've grown up being in love with the Celtics and the broadcast side of it. So it hasn't sunk in that I'm going to be, I don't know where we're going to be. I'm assuming we're going to be where the booth would normally be. So that's going to be really cool. Personally, that's going to be a really cool kind of a nostalgia kind of moment, like being at the TD Garden courtside, calling a pro basketball game. So that's going to be really neat. From what I've heard, they're going to blow it out. They're going to have a studio or a remote studio at the Garden for pre, half, and post. They're going to really do a bang up job with it. So to answer your question, I am very excited about that. It still hasn't quite sunk in because it's never happened before. It's like, not like we normally get one of these games on the schedule. It's a bummer. It's a real bummer that Cameron Brink is probably not going to play in that game. That's a big name coming in with the Sparks, but it makes sense. LA, Boston, I think that works. From what I've gathered, I think they've got a deal with one of the train stations to help folks that are in Connecticut get to, but it seems like they're not having any problems because the game is almost sold out, which is going to be electric. And that's one of those moments, Sean, where I think you're going to be, they used to tell us this when I was in college, like sometimes you should try to take the headset off and just like soak it in. That'll be one of those moments, I think. So thanks. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Now I'm thinking about it more. it's going to be really cool. And you're going, right?
I'm going. I have tickets. I think I'm probably going to apply for a credential. See if I can get my way in there. Especially because like I worked with covering the Celtics, and so it'll be good to be back in the press room again at the Garden. But
look, and you just said it. This is my fourth year doing the games, and you've been kind of a fan of the team now the last couple of years. It's infectious. I mean, Stephanie White, the Sun coach, says this all the time. Like, once you get someone to one game, you kind of get hooked on it because it's good basketball. It's a good product, and I know we just kind of did a bunch of X's and O's there. Like, it's these women. They know how to play, and I know they don't play above the rim. That's why, like, I think when folks were first tuning in the early part of the year, when they're dug in defensively at three quarters court, like, are they trying to send a message? I guess maybe, but it's also like that's been the league. And I think that's something. The irony in all of it is, I think folks have kind of complained that the NBA regular season product is kind of watered down. Like, you don't see as intense defense and the personality and the rivalry. Like, these women, there's a lot of respect for one another because, again, when you're in a smaller league and there's a lot of crossover, you've played with a lot of these players in college or you've been pros with these players, against them, with them for a number of years. It's going to be a big moment. So I think it's another great stage of this 2024 season to elevate women's basketball. And it's no longer just growing. I think it's arrived. I mean, the TV deal reflects that. Yes, it's still growing. Don't get me wrong. But I think this idea now that it's like, oh, it's on the come up. Like, I think it's here. That All-Star game to me was like, it's here. It's here. And there is a window of opportunity that they are, I think it's happening right before our eyes. It's happening. So this is a good example for the Suns specifically. We're going to be on NBC Sports Boston. So it'll be a local show. They can sell advertisement. That was a big deal for them. Like, we don't want to get a game. And selfishly, we're like, great, we get to do the game. You know, it wouldn't do them any favors if the game was nationally televised because then you can't blow it up as a Sun event. So there's going to be stuff going on. I'm pretty sure like Monday there's going to be camps and there's going to be I don't want to speak out of line. I want to make sure I have this. They're doing like a watch party on Sunday for the Sunday Atlanta game. So this is like a 3-day thing leading into Tuesday. So it's going to be really cool. It's going to be really, really cool. So.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. If you're a Sun fan listening and you don't have tickets yet, you're going to want to definitely hurry up and get those last couple. I was trying to see if I could buy a couple more to get my brothers to the game. We went down to Mohegan for my dad's birthday. Nice. And they were like, you know, we didn't get any tickets for Boston. Can you see if you can find some around you? And my seats are in the balcony. And I was like, no, I can't see anything around where mine are. So if you want to go, now's the time. Make sure you get those last couple tickets.
And again, the benefit of this franchise is they haven't won the championship yet, but they are a win. They've been a consistent winning product now. I mean, the way they consistently bring it on both ends, and that's a credit to their stars like Thomas and Bonner. Thomas is the head of the snake in all of it because she just, when your best player plays almost 40 minutes every night and is all gas, no breaks, that's infectious. And the fact that they've won so many games over the years, like the helpful part, this is, I'm like stating the obvious, like it's a winning product of basketball. Like they win games. So it's not like you're going to a game where you're not watching a good team or it's a rebuild. Like this is no, like they might not have a shiny new rookie out of this rookie class. I understand that. I know that's what's garnered a lot of attention, but this team knows how to win and they put on a good show. It's not always pretty. Cause again, when you're predicated on defense, it's not the sexiest basketball, but they compete for the full 40. So
yeah, I think New Englanders are New England basketball fans are used to a lot of defense now, right? I mean, the Celtics have primed a bunch of Boston and, you know, Boston area fans to be like, oh yeah, defense is important and fun to watch, right?
I would argue that the two championships that they've won now in 08 and even this one, I know, you know, off the stars of the stars, you've got, I mean, Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, White, Holiday, Horford, go right down the list. I mean, I think they won that championship because of their investment and their commitment to the defensive end, which is not easy to do when you have two budding stars that know, hey, I got to get to the All-Star game. I got to average 30. You know, like they've bought in. And at the end of the day, I think the Final Four with Dallas, Boston, and then Minnesota and,
Indiana.
Indiana, yeah. I mean, those were all teams that had good second halves of the season on the defensive end of the floor. More so those first three. Indiana wasn't as great, but Indiana just, I think they caught some breaks. The Celtics caught some breaks with the path, but defensively they separated and they hit, and they're talented. Like their talent is undisputable. It's just their the defense. That's how they've won their most teams at the end. They win because they bring it to a certain degree on the defensive end of the floor.
Absolutely, and that's definitely the Sun for sure. How their games are played, but Brendan, thank you so much for joining the show. Thanks for sticking around for a long time. I know you're busy. I'm shocked you're not, you know, putting your headset on to call a game already.
We're gonna be all fired up, man. We've got 3 weeks off now. I mean, our next game's not until August 18th, so I'm like kind of, part of me is now like I want this Olympic break to be over. But no, good to get a couple weeks and. Yeah, we're coming out strong, right? They're coming out to the they're in Atlanta, and then or they're in Dallas, and they're in Atlanta, and then yeah, boom, TD Garden game. So that's it comes right out of the chute. So yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be good.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. You can find Brendan on your TV basically every night if you watch a bunch of sports, but you can especially see him calling the Sun for NBC Sports Boston, and whenever those games are national. Brendan, where else should people be looking to find you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is Brendan Glasheen. Instagram is BJ_Glash. Josh was my middle name. Yeah, other than that, I think he covered it. So
awesome. Well, thanks again, Brendan, for joining the show. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Sean. Thanks for having me.
I want to say another massive thank you to Brendan Glasheen for joining the show. I'm away next week, and initially I thought I'd split this interview into two parts, but honestly, it was so much fun recording that I thought it'd be better to just put it out all at once. Since I will be out of town, I'll do a very quick recap of Alyssa Thomas and Team USA and how they're doing at the Olympics, but it will definitely be a shorter episode next week. Make sure that you are subscribed to the show wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any new episodes that come out. You can also find us on YouTube. Also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please make sure to leave a review and rating so that other Sun fans can find the show. As a reminder, I want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media at @CTSunPod or email us at ctsunpod@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail to hear your voice on the show. The number is 617-903-7683. Thank you again for listening. Thank you to Brendan, and I will talk to you all next week here on Here Come the Sun.